Michael Ann, you're familiar with her if you've been coming to these breakfasts for a while. She's been here twice before, speaking on a panel with Greg Medlin and his group. We're excited that she's come back this morning with her dad. This is what I'm excited about, is to be able to have a father-daughter duo to share with us a little bit about what it means to be a dad. So Michael Ann is an LPC. She specializes in working with families, individuals, and children. She works with them to achieve healthy, strong relationships. And then Mike is a speaker and the director of an international marriage ministry and also himself a pastoral counselor. He's dedicated his ministry to strengthening families and marriages. We couldn't be more excited to have them here this morning. So why don't you join me in welcoming Michael Ann and Mike.
Thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate it. I got to tell you that being a dad is the most guilt-producing thing I've ever done in my life. Never done anything else that's ever made me feel this guilty. Now, as a heads up, grandparenting is guilt-free, so when you get there, it's cool. But being a dad is guilt-producing because you're never sure that what you've done is enough. And that is particularly true if indeed you did not have a good father yourself. We learn to parent from our parents. That's really the only hands-on knowledge you get. The only training you get is watching your mom and your dad. And if your dad was absent, or if he was angry or abusive or just non-involved, then you don't have much of a pattern. You don't have much of an example to follow. That was my case. My dad was, he was present, but he was angry and somewhat abusive. Verbally and some physically. He knocked me out two or three times that I can remember. I don't know the other times. But it wasn't a terrible experience because as a counselor, I've dealt with men who've dealt with much, much worse than that. But it was bad enough that it wasn't really the kind of thing I wanted to perpetuate on my family. And so I decided that I wanted to do parenting differently than my father had done it. My wife and I sat down together. And we decided to start parenting with the end in mind. What do we want to produce? What is the end result that we want? And so we made a plan, and I knew I had to make some changes in order to make this thing work. I wanted to parent differently than what I had been parented.
I was really excited to ask my dad to join me today. Number one, because I haven't ever gotten to speak with him before. But secondly, who better to share experiences, share information about fathers and their children than a dad and his kid. So today, rather than just sharing with you statistics, research, which I imagine you've heard before, we'd like to share our experiences and share what worked, maybe what didn't, share what he tried to do and how I received it. So we hope that we can give a little bit of insight from our experience and pass that on as you are working with your children and trying to make the impact that you would like to make. If I was asked what the most memorable and probably meaningful experience that I've had with my dad, I would look back to when I was in sixth grade. And you know, you're making that transition from elementary school into middle school, and you have to learn how to study. And I remember sitting in class, getting a test handed back to me, I think it was science, and I had a big old C on that test. And I thought I was gonna die.
I would have rejoiced over a C at times in science, but you know, not her.
not me. And I really thought I was gonna die. And I was embarrassed, upset, and eventually made my way to the office and called home and said, I'm sick. And so my dad was the one who came, he picked me up, and it didn't take him too long before he realized that I was not, in fact, sick. And he started asking questions. And so it came out, and I fell apart, and I got a C on this test, and, you know, I'm just so upset. And the way that my dad responded to that moment, I will never forget. Because at first he said, who cares? And I, you know, was shocked that my dad would say, who cares about a C on a test? And then he said, you know what, I'll tell you this. If you can bring home a C on your report card, I'll give you $50. And I remember just thinking, he's lost his mind. But in the reality of the situation was is that he understood how I was viewing my worth. And he took a look at what I was going through, and he saw she's equating her worth and her value as a person with the grades that she brings home on this test. And so what he did is he gave me the opportunity to be safe to fail, number one, and to separate my value and my worth from the product that I, you know, from the things that I produce, from the things that I do. And I remember feeling just an incredible sense of relief. Number one, because my dad showed up. Number two, because my dad was loving and warm and he listened to me. Number three, because he made it safe for me to continue growing and to continue becoming the person who I was. And number four, because he showed me where my true value lied. He didn't care when it came down to it what I did and what was more important, just who I was as a person.
I like the story because it's a story of success, because there's so many others that I could share with you that were not successful. You know, anyone who's done fathering, you know that you got both kinds of stories. What sticks out in my mind are the failures, but fortunately, my daughters remember more of the successes, so I praise God for their selective memory. But the thing that I've learned through all of this is that it is more important to start with warmth when it comes to parenting. As fathers, very often we are the ones who do more of the rules, or we want to add structure. And if you start with structure, you begin to find a relationship that is strained with your children. I believe that healthy parenting begins with warmth and then add structure. The structure comes, you should have as few rules as possible. They should make sense. They should be evenly enforced. There should be a reason. You should be able to explain to your child why you have the rule. But the focus is not the rules. The focus is the relationship. If you start with the relationship, you're better off. To start with the rules, really you reduce yourself to an experience of command and control. Command and control really has to do with authoritarian leadership. And authoritarian leadership in the home results in rebellion. Bank on it, your kids will rebel. Either that, or they'll become super compliant and then have a later life rebellion. It may come in their 20s or 30s when they can actually do more serious damage to their life than what they would if they had the normal rebellion of a teenager. Mm-hmm. So command and control is always destructive, but starting with warmth and then adding structure is a healthier way to go. Your children, number one, need to know that you're safe and that you love them, that you're tender.
By focusing on that warmth in the relationship, one thing that it does is it makes you approachable. And so when you're dealing with the rules and the regulations and the limits that you've put in place that are necessary for your kids, it also makes it to where your child can come and approach you and talk about the things that they're concerned about. If they don't like this rule, if they feel like something was unfair, they can approach you because there's that relationship that existed before the rules.
I think that just being present and being engaged in their lives is an important thing as well. You know, sometimes it's easy to leave some of these things to mom. And certainly mom does a better job at some of them. I know that she did better at a lot of the things. When it was left to me to cook, my children were never hungry. And I don't know why. I figure coincidence.
Mushroom soup, water.
Yeah.
That was about it.
They hated
eggs.
My mushroom soup. Yeah. I don't know why that is. And when it came time for me, I remember doing Michael Ann's hair once before school when mom was out of town. She cried. She looked in the mirror and cried. And her older sister, who was only 2 years older than her, she whispered, "Don't worry, sweetie, I'll redo it for you." And she did. And actually, it looked better than when I did it. So, but still, I was there. I showed up and I did my part. I did my best in order to help in their lives.
And I remember playing with my dad a great deal. And I hope that that's something that you do with your kids, that you play and that you're silly. My husband actually recently this summer, he started collecting our old VHS tapes, you know, from back in the day, and from home movies, and he was transferring that and digitizing it. And so, I mean, that's kind of a scary prospect because he's been sitting there watching my childhood, and it's a little embarrassing. But one of the things that he came across, and he called me and he was like, "You have to see this," was a home video of my dad and I dancing around the living room together to some, I don't know, just classical music or something ridiculous. And we were dancing around as though, you know, I don't know. It was hilarious and embarrassing and a little bit terrifying. But those are the memories that I have from my childhood with my dad, is that he was silly with me, that he would play with me, that he would dance around the living room with me. And those are valuable.
There's certain things that a dad tells his children that no one else can really tell them. And of course, I raise daughters, and I've learned that it's the dad who tells the daughter that you are smart and you are capable. She hears that more from dad than she will hear it from her mom. She'll believe it more from dad than she will from mom. It's the dad who tells her that you are beautiful. that you are worthwhile, that you are of value. It's the dad who tells her you are so important and so valuable that you have the right to expect a guy to wait, to expect a guy to pursue you, and yet to wait, because that's how valuable you are. If dad tells her that, she believes it. It's also the dad who tells the son, you can do this. I believe in you. In fact, John Eldredge says that manhood is something that is not something you acquire when you turn 21. It's something that is bestowed upon a man by his father. That the father is the one who tells the son, I believe in you, you measure up, you're a man. And if the father doesn't do that, either in words or in action, then the young man spends the rest of his life trying to prove that he does measure up, prove that he matters, prove that he's someone, and never really finding the satisfaction of knowing that he does measure up. Thoreau says most men lead lives of quiet desperation, and I believe that's true for a lot of men. They live with shame and the shame of not really measuring up, especially when dad has not sent that message loud and clear, you are a man and I believe in you.
Yeah. And I don't think that happens in one isolated conversation.
No.
but that happens through ongoing experiences and being present and sending that message on over and over through not only the things that you say, but also the way that you interact and the way that you relate to your child. I was high school age, I think, when I started considering counseling as a career path for me. And one way that my dad sent that message that you are capable to do anything that you want is that when he found that out, you know, he has a background in counseling, we would take walks in the evening sometimes, and he would give me counseling scenarios, you know, okay, if this was going on, what would you do? You know, I'm just a high schooler, but that was teaching me, even at that stage, that if this is the path you want to take, you can do it, and I'm going to support you, and I'm going to give you the skills that you need to be able to accomplish that.
Those were good walks. Sometimes she'd come to me and say, Daddy, let's take a walk. And it wasn't that she needed the exercise because she was active in sports. I needed the exercise, but that's not what she was interested in. She wanted the opportunity to connect, to talk, and to dream about her future as being a counselor. And I thought that was, I was honored to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. Another thing I think is important for a dad to do, especially for both daughters and sons, is to treat their mother with respect. And that's true whether mom's in the home or not. Even if indeed you're divorced, I believe it's important that you never trash the woman, especially in front of your children, mm-hmm. but that you always treat her with dignity and respect. A young man learns how to treat women from watching dad deal with his mom and deal with dad's wife, his mom, the boy's mom. A girl learns that she needs to expect a boy to treat her with respect by watching the way her father treats her mother, and also by the way he treats her. And so treating your wife with dignity, with respect, with gentleness, it's okay to, I think, have a disagreement in front of the children, but because they need to see that and see you resolve that conflict, that's something I probably didn't do enough of with you, to see your mom and I disagree. But we always wanted to make sure that our presence in front of the children was one of harmony. I think one of the strongest things you can do for your children is to let them know, our marriage is secure, I love your mother, we are together, and we're not going to be separated. This is something that is solid. And I think that sends a message to children that is healthy.
Mm-hmm. And in working with families, very often I work with families or with children who have experienced divorce. And the same thing, like my dad said, the same thing is true for divorced families, because the one thing that I see that puts a child at risk, it puts a child in a very painful situation, is when mom and dad are bad-mouthing each other to the child. They get caught in the middle, you see anxiety, you see depression, you see a lot of anger. And the reality is that when they become adults and they're able to look back with an adult perspective on that situation, and they're able to see, wow, my dad, my mom really undermined my relationship with the other parent, there's resentment there.
Mm-hmm.
And so being so careful, even in a divorce situation, to always be respectful of that other parent is a gift that you can give to your child. I remember many times when I was, I don't know, probably high school age and before that, maybe smarting off to my mom.
Surely not.
Yeah, I did it. And every time, if my dad was in ear, you know, in hearing range, he would always step in and say, "You don't talk to your mother that way." Almost in a way like he's never met me before. You know, he steps in, "You don't talk to my wife that way." He would say that. Those are the words he would actually use. And, you know, in that moment, it maybe made me a little bit angry, but the reality was is that he was showing me how it should be and who should be defended, and that someday, now I have a three-year-old, and just last week it made me laugh because, you know, in her little three-year-old way, she smarted off to me, said something to me when I was telling her to do something, and my husband stepped in and said, "You don't talk to your mom that way." And it just made me smile because that didn't happen in a vacuum. The fact that I chose that man to marry had a lot to do with the way that my parents modeled when I was growing up.
There are some roles that men have played traditionally throughout history, and some of those roles I think are being minimalized today. Maybe it's not politically correct or something, but one of the roles I think that is important is simply that of protector. We protect women. It's what we do. There's nothing wrong with that role, and I think it's an important role. We see the abdication of that role with domestic violence and with the light attitude that has been expressed by many for years about domestic violence. But it's not just that. It's our attitudes and our words. I think that being the protector of women and children is an honorable role. It's something that we need to take seriously and do. And at times that means even protecting your family from yourself, from your own anger, from your own resentment, your own rage. Anger has been a part of my life, in part because of just a temperament, but also because it was self-defense mechanism against my father. He would rage at me, and even as a scrawny little kid, I would rage back. And so it became a part of my... I wanted to make sure that I protected my family from that rage. I did a better job at that as the years went by, but it was important that my children, my wife, my family be protected, even at times from myself, but certainly from the outside world.
Mm-hmm. No free passes. that was something that my dad brought up, and I'm starting to get a picture of the reality of that. That as a parent, as a father, there really are no free passes, because the truth is that you are teaching all the time. No matter what it is that you're doing, whether you are aware of it or not, you're sending messages to your kids. And dad and mom both say, you know, when we look back at your childhood and we have these certain moments that we just feel like were pivotal, that, you know, that was it, and we talk to you about it and you guys say, "I don't remember that." that can be pretty disheartening, because you think, this is it, this is the moment I'm passing something on, and it may not stick. And then there may be something else that you feel like, oh, that was just something passing, you know, that's not going to mean anything. And that's the thing that sticks in your kid's memory. And so that can be tough, to feel like, you know, I'm supposed to be on all the time. But the reality is that we are teaching all the time. The other good news is that your kids are really resilient. And they can go through a lot of things and be okay. You don't have to pay for therapy for every little mistake that you make along the way.
Thank the Lord for that. You know, the other thing about that with the no free passes is the fact is that you're going to screw up. And if you haven't already, it means you're not a father. You're going to do that. But I think that it's important that as that happens, that you acknowledge that I messed up. That you tell your child, "You know what? I blew it. Forgive me. I was wrong to have done that." Now, one of the things that a man wants more than anything else is to be respected by his family, especially your wife. We avoid shame like the plague, and to experience a failure and acknowledge a failure seems to be producing guilt and shame for us, and we hate that. Most men do. But I found something rather interesting. In fact, it was shocking to me, and that is when I acknowledged my mistake and I confessed it before my family and my children in particular, and I asked for their forgiveness, I had more respect from them than I did before. Acknowledging my mistake, asking for forgiveness, actually produced greater respect for my family toward me than it would have if I had just tried to brush the mistake under the rug and ignore it and act like it hadn't happened. So fessing up and saying, "I blew it, got no one to blame but me, I was wrong. It doesn't matter what you did, I made a bad choice." and this is my fault. Please forgive me. That's a healthy thing to do.
We were talking through, what are the big mess ups that stand out in my mind? And, you know, I guess that kind of puts you on the spot.
Yeah, thank you.
But, yeah, one of the things that I remember was a moment where my sister and I were 2 years apart. We were fighting, and we fought a lot in those middle school years. It was not pretty. And
that seemed like it was forever.
Yeah. That made him crazy. That was the thing that could just set him off when we would go at it and we were fighting all the time. And I remember one time where he just was so angry and he was yelling at us, and then he went back to the back room and we hear this huge crash and we both freeze, and then we go running back there to see. And as you walk into the bathroom, you saw in his closet door that there might have been a small hole that he had punched into the closet door.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing
not
is...
Not a proud moment.
No. The thing is that even in that moment, he had already established a relationship with us that was safe. We never feared him in that moment. And in fact, we kind of stood there and thought, all right, we're off the hook because Dad just punched a hole in the closet. So we're good to go. But even in that moment, we didn't fear him, but we saw that he had messed up. And over time, after Dad cooled down a little bit, he did stop and apologize and acknowledge that he made a mistake. He let the anger get the best of him. And so those moments where you are able to step forward and to offer the apology to your children also teaches your children it's okay not to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And it's okay, we are going to mess up, and this is what it looks like. This is what we do when we've messed up.
I think there's another important issue, and again, there's a lot of research actually that supports this, is that one of the best things you can do for your family and your children is to be a godly man. That means to be a man of spirituality. And spirituality to me is simply seeking the face of God, longing to know Him and be known by Him, and then living that out in your life, whether it be church attendance, Bible study, prayer, and just living out the values that Christianity teaches. By the time your child is six, they pretty well know what your expressed values are. And by the time they're 12, they know which ones you express and which ones you live, if indeed there's a difference between those. They may or may not be able to put it into words, but they know whether or not there's incongruency between your expressed values and your lived values. And if they see that those two are pretty close together, then they realize that this is something important to you and something that they're more likely to emulate. Research shows higher levels of marital satisfaction and familial satisfaction in homes where both mom and dad express spirituality. They live it out, especially when there's a grace orientation to their spirituality. The second best scenario is if only one of the two of them can be spiritual, it's always best if it's dad. That is the second highest level of marital and familial satisfaction, is when dad is a spiritual man. Even if mom is not, if dad is and lives those values and expresses them, that produces higher levels of marital and familial satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Find moments to share grace with your kids. It's necessary for the rules, for the boundaries to be firmly in place in order for you to share grace, because they have to know what the rules are, they have to know what the guidelines are to know when they've messed up. But once that is clear and the children are aware of what you expect from them and what the rules and the guidelines are for your family, then it is so valuable for you to share grace with your children. Sure, there might be natural consequences that they're going to experience because of their mistakes, but if you can find the moments to offer grace to your children, that is how they get an experience of their relationship with the Heavenly Father. If they understand what it feels like to be warm and to be accepted and to be safe from their Father, then they have such a positive view of what their relationship will look like with their Heavenly Father, and expect that I'm going to mess up, but my Father is not going to let go of me, that He's going to continue bringing me back into relationship with Him time and again. And that's such a valuable lesson that you can pass on to your kids. You know, growing up, my dad, both my parents actually were in the ministry, and so most of my life they were pastoring a church or two that I grew up in. And when sharing that with other people, I get that negative reaction of like, oh, you're the pastor's kid, you know. And I do think that there are probably lots of horror stories out there about that. But in my experience, you know, I hear that and I remember thinking, you know, often just I don't really get what it is that they're referring to, because my parents did well in that area. That could be a bad situation where I could come out with a really negative view of church and what faith looks like and Christianity and all of those things, but that didn't happen to me. Number one, because my parents and my father was consistent on the platform, the way that he lived, in the same way that he lived in our home. So he didn't change from the moment that he was up there to when he came home. He was the same person. And so when I saw that consistency, it helped me to embrace it rather than reject it and push it away. And secondly, my parents never put pressure on me that you're the pastor's kid and so you have to act a certain way, you have to present yourself in a certain way. But rather, they looked at me as a kid who was going to grow up just like any other kid in this church. And by doing that, they made it safe for me. And they didn't create an atmosphere that would make me angry, want to reject the faith that they were bringing me up in.
There's some research that was done. In fact, this is a statistic I almost hesitate to share with you because it just seems so outlandish. But the National Association of Marriage Enrichment, Marriage Enhancement in Phoenix, Arizona, released a study. And this study examined couples that prayed with and for each other on a daily basis. I mean, 7 days a week, they prayed with and for each other. That was their commitment. Mm-hmm. Long-term study of those families, they found that only one in 1,156 got a divorce. That just seems outlandish to me. I can't even put my mind around that statistic, but that's the statistic that they shared. One in 1,156. Again, the best thing that you as a man can do for your family is to make sure that your marriage is secure and to make sure that you live your values as a Christian man. And I think that those things begin to your kids see that, you can't hide it from them. They will see it and it will change them. Christianity is more caught than taught. And when they see you living that, then it begins to make an impact on their lives as well, I think. Mm-hmm. I guess in summary, if you show up, show up for your kid's life. You know, Woody Allen said 80% of life is just showing up. It's one of the few times I agree with him. you know, you show up, you know, they can't say, well, he was never there. Show up, listen up, accept your children just as they are. Be warm, affectionate, and basically in those ways become the leader in your home, modeling Christianity and warmth and affection, modeling God's grace. That's being the leader, I think.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions? We've rambled on for quite a while. Yeah. Yeah. This is the first time we've ever given this, so no. We've never had a presentation together before, so this is kind of fun.
We can give you notes if nothing else.
Yeah, I got a piece of paper here you can take with you.
But it'll be online.
I don't know.
We can email that out to everybody.
Okay, good.
Okay.
All right, good.
That works.
He'll do that.
So yes.
Yeah, he'll,
yes.
He'll email it out to everybody.
Yes.
Good. Sure. Anything else? Yeah.
Ooh.
Thanks a lot, man. Dude, come on.
Yeah. You know, I think one thing that, and this probably has a lot to do with my personality too, but one thing that I would say my parents didn't do well with, and it's kind of a strange thing, is that they didn't do well with modeling failure to me. They were both successful. Everything they did well. I didn't really see my parents fall on their faces too much. And they didn't really talk about their shortcomings. They didn't talk about their failures. And so I think that also that combined with my personality of pushing, feeling like I should always be overachieving, that made it hard for me to accept failures in myself and to you know, and that results, you know, resulted in anxiety for me for a long time. And still, you know, something that I deal with ongoing is just being able to say, okay, I am what I am, and I'm going to do my best, but there are things that are always going to be outside of my control, and there are going to be times where I fall down and where I mess up. And they didn't do so well as talking about that and modeling that for me.
I played golf with your husband the other day, and he chastised me for that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said that the anxiety you feel over failure is my fault, and so so thank you for sharing that with him too.
I don't know what the you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
I don't know what the age is that we can stop blaming that on our parents, but I'll hang on to it as long as I can. Yeah.
So what would you change about you?
Was that the question?
Was that part of it? Was that a part of it?
I don't feel like that was the question.
Okay. Oh, what I would change.
About what
I would change. Okay. What I would change is, again, my greatest thing was trying to overcome a negative example as a father. And that was an example of rage, command and control, anger, physical violence. Those who have been physically abused are 5 times more likely to abuse their own children. I knew that going in. And that was a huge fear for me. And the times that I lost my temper, for me was even more significant, I think, than it was for someone who had never experienced what I'd experienced, because I lived with that fear that I would do to my children what was done to me. I did not want that. If I could do anything, if I could go back in time, I would erase that part of my childhood, that part of the violence and the rage that was exhibited against me, because that would have given me, I think, a head start in parenting my own children without that. I needed at times to protect my children from myself. I think through the years, it's either righteousness by faith or senility. I don't know which it is, but I've become less raging through the years. And whichever it is, I'll embrace. I know that early on, as a young man, the frustrations would grow and the anger would be there and the rage was right on the verge. And erasing more of that. The other thing is that through my life, I've never regretted time that I took away from work to be with my children, but I have regretted not doing that. And so I think showing up even more often would be another thing that I would do, because I don't remember what it was that was so important that I was doing when I didn't go to the ball game or I didn't go to a recital. You know, I went to most of them, but when I didn't, I don't know what it was that was that important. But I remember the ball game I missed, and so I wish I'd shown up more often. I worked for a while as a hospice chaplain and a hospital chaplain, and I've attended well over 500 deaths. And I've never once had anyone say as they're facing death, man, I wish I'd worked harder. I wish I'd closed one more deal or bought that BMW or whatever else it may be. But I have had them say, I wish to God I'd taken more time with my family. Or I wish I'd taken more time with God. Those are the things that they begin to regret. And so if that's what you regret at the end of your life, maybe that should give me a cue as to how to live my life. That I need to take the time to do those things that really do matter, because the only things that people really think about when they're facing death is God, my relationships, and did I enjoy it? I was here. Did I enjoy any of it? Did I make a difference? And really, when you think about making a difference, it has to do with the people you love more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Anything else? You guys are way too easy. Matt, we're going to turn it back over to you.
Thank you.
Thanks.